Welcome to Property Smart Advisors, the real estate and mortgage podcast. Whether you're a first-time buyer or just curious, all the tools you need to find, fund, and fortify your future. Because success isn't left to chance, it's built with precision. So turn up the volume and let's get started.
PropertySmart.ca.
In August of 2026, home sales in Edmonton basically just fell off a cliff. I mean, inventory piled up completely.
Right, which goes against every instinct we have about supply and demand, honestly.
Exactly. So why did sellers actually walk away with more money than they did a year ago?
It's weird, right? You see more for sale signs popping up on lawns, and you just assume, well, prices must be plummeting.
But they aren't. And that is the massive paradox we're facing today. We've got this stack of fresh data to make sense of basically the Greater Edmonton Area August 2026 Real Estate Report.
Along with the latest daily mortgage memo, yeah.
Right, and just a whole lot of macroeconomic noise. Like the Bank of Canada held rates steady, yet we're seeing all this massive upward pressure on fixed mortgage rates.
Which leaves literally anyone trying to make a move right now in a state of total paralysis.
Yeah, it's terrifying. So our mission in this deep dive today is to fight that urge. We have to stop making these, you know, six-figure housing decisions based on one headline or one interest rate or just one scary statistic.
For sure. You really have to look at the whole board to answer the real question here.
Which is, who actually has the advantage right now? Is it the buyer who waits or the buyer who acts?
And honestly, it is a completely different board depending on where you sit. I'm going to look at this from the perspective of the homeowner and the prospective seller.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, so my primary concerns are going to be protecting my equity, trying to sell in what is suddenly a much slower market, and navigating what looks like a really painful upcoming mortgage renewal.
That makes sense. And I'll inherently look at this as the buyer. I'm the one worried about overpaying at the top of the market. I'm fretting over rising rates, just, you know, eating into my monthly budget.
Right, the classic buyer panic.
Oh, totally. And I'm constantly wondering if waiting on the sidelines for a crash is actually the smartest financial play.
Well, let's look at what you think is blood in the water.
Let's do it. Because the August report shows year-to-date sales are down 9.8% compared to last year.
Yes, and year-to-date new listings are up roughly 15%.
Right, so we're sitting at roughly 3.8 months of inventory across the greater Edmonton area and about 4.2 months in Edmonton proper. That is over 8,000 units just sitting there.
It is a lot of inventory, I'll give you that.
So as a buyer, I look at those 8,000 properties and I think, okay, the frenzy is dead. I finally have some negotiating power. I don't have to waive my home inspection anymore. And I can start offering well below the list price.
Oh, I mean, you definitely have more breathing room now. The crazy bidding wars that we saw characterized the spring market, those are largely gone for most property types.
Goodness.
Yeah, but having choices doesn't automatically trigger this market-wide price collapse that buyers always hope for. The assumption buyers make is that a jump to 4.2 months of inventory means sellers are just panicking.
Are they not?
They aren't. In fact, if you actually look at the sale prices in that same August report, the average residential sale price actually ticked up 1.8% year over year.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it's just over $469,000 now.
That is just wild to me. Like, sales volume drops, inventory goes way up, but prices hold steady or even climb slightly.
Because the motivation to sell hasn't shifted into desperation yet. We are seeing a negotiation market right now, not a declining price market.
Okay, so what does that actually mean for me on the ground?
It means sellers are sitting on a fair amount of equity right now, unless they're forced to liquidate because of, say, a severe financial shock.
Like losing a job or something.
Exactly. Without that, they simply hold their ground. You can negotiate on closing dates, you can absolutely keep your inspection condition, and you might get a modest reduction from the list price.
Okay, but I can't just throw out a lowball offer.
No, lowballing an aggressively priced home just because inventory is up 15%.
Yeah.
That's completely misreading the psychology of the current seller.
I get that, but it really feels like sellers might be holding on to this, I don't know, this perception of value that the current interest rate environment just doesn't support anymore.
That's a fair point.
And I think that brings us to the core issue of what the Edmonton price actually means. Because the headlines are incredibly misleading for both of us right now.
Oh, absolutely. They throw all these different numbers at you.
Right. We have three distinct numbers floating around in this report. The average price is sitting at about $470,000.
Yeah.
The median price is at $439,000. And then The benchmark price, the home price index, that's down at roughly $427,000. The problem I see is that buyers and sellers latch onto that $470,000 average and just make wildly inaccurate assumptions about their finances.
The average price is arguably the most dangerous metric for a homeowner to use when they're assessing their own equity.
Because it's skewed, right?
Heavily, oh. It is highly susceptible to shifts in the product mix.
Because it's completely warped by the high end of the market. I was digging into the sales data, and we had multiple transactions in the $3.5 million plus range this past month.
Exactly. When a few sprawling luxury estates trade hands, it drags the entire mathematical average up.
Or, I guess, if fewer entry-level condos sell 1 month and more detached homes sell, the average jumps, even if the underlying value of every single home stayed completely flat.
That's exactly how it works. It creates a headline that says, you know, Edmonton housing gets more expensive. But the actual lived reality for someone buying a standard post-war bungalow hasn't changed at all.
Right. And that is why I heavily discount the average and prefer to look at the benchmark. The HPI kind of strips out those extremes and tracks a typical home with consistent features over time. So that $427,000 figure, that reflects the actual reality of the market.
I completely agree. A seller looking at the headline average of $470,000 might think their standard 1990s buy level in the suburbs has suddenly appreciated by 5 or 6% this year.
And it hasn't.
No. The key takeaway for anyone listening is this. Your home does not appreciate at the Edmonton average.
That's such a good way to put it.
Its value is dictated by hyper-local factors, you know, the specific neighborhood, the property type, the condition, and the immediate competition. If a seller prices based on a citywide average rather than neighborhood comparables, their property is just going to contribute to that growing pile of 8,000 active listings.
It'll just sit there. And the divergence in the market is even more extreme when we split it by property type. There really is no singular Edmonton market.
Not at all. The price tiers are telling completely different stories.
Right, let's look at those. Detached homes are averaging around $576,000, and they are pretty much holding their value year over year.
Yep, staying strong.
But then you look at semi-detached, sitting around $424,000. Townhouses are at $298,000, and apartment condos are way down at $215,000. And both townhouses and condos are actually showing slight price declines year over year.
Which is really interesting.
It is. As a buyer, it raises this provocative question. Are entry-level buyers quietly getting a significantly better opportunity right now than move-up buyers?
The data certainly points that way, especially when you start factoring in time on the market.
Which is longer for cheaper places, right?
Yeah, the further down the price ladder you go, the longer the property sits. Condos are taking up 48 days to sell on average right now.
Wow, 48 days. That is a month and a half of carrying costs, condo fees, and property taxes for the seller.
It adds up fast.
So if I am shopping for a $215,000 condo, and I know that seller has been sitting for 45 days, my negotiating leverage is fundamentally different than if I'm competing for a $576,000 detached home that turns over way faster.
Exactly. And from the seller's perspective, in that entry-level tier, it's a really harsh reality check.
I bet.
If I am listing an apartment condo, I have to price it aggressively from day one. I cannot test the waters with some aspirational price because buyers just have too many options.
They'll just move on to the next one.
Right. The cumulative days on market for some of these attached properties is dragging out past 2 months when you account for the ones that expire and get relisted. You're competing against new construction, investor sell-offs, and other homeowners all at once.
So really, the question isn't whether Edmonton is affordable. The question is, which part of Edmonton housing is affordable for you and how much leverage you have in that specific micro market?
That's the perfect way to look at it.
Well, let's pivot to the financing side, because quite frankly, finding the house is almost secondary to affording the debt right now.
Oh, financing is the real source of anxiety.
Totally. On one hand, the Bank of Canada held its policy rate steady at 2.25%.
Right, which sounds like good news.
Yeah, a lot of buyers saw that and thought, great, rates are paused, my borrowing power is stable. But simultaneously, the five-year Government of Canada bond yield surged to roughly 3.42%.
It did.
We're hearing warnings that discount five-year fixed mortgage rates could be pushed back into the mid-4% range. So the bank didn't raise rates. So why could fixed mortgage rates still rise?
It is a massive point of confusion, honestly. Consumers tend to view all mortgage rates as this single entity that's just entirely controlled by the Bank of Canada.
But they aren't?
No.
No.
Variable rates and fixed rates are driven by two completely different engines.
Okay, let me test my understanding of the bond market mechanism here just to make sure I've got this right.
Go for it.
So variable rates are pretty straightforward. They are directly tethered to the prime rate, which moves with the Bank of Canada. So if the bank holds at 2.25, variable rates hold.
Exactly. That's the easy one.
Right. But fixed rates are tied to the 5-year Government of Canada bond yield. Because when a bank lends me money for 5 years at a fixed rate, they need to secure 5-year money from the bond market to match that liability, right?
We've done it so far.
Okay. And bond yields operate like a seesaw with inflation risk. Investors who buy these bonds want a guaranteed return over 5 years. If they look at the global landscape,
which is pretty chaotic right now.
Very. Like the ongoing conflict in the Middle East keeping oil prices elevated, or new U.S. tariffs threatening to increase the cost of goods, they see future inflation. And if inflation goes up, the fixed return on their bond loses its purchasing power.
Precisely.
So to compensate for that risk, investors demand a higher yield up front today. Is that right?
You've completely nailed the mechanism. The bond market doesn't wait for the Bank of Canada. It prices in future risk in real time.
Wow, okay.
So when those bond yields rise to 3.42%, the bank's cost of securing that capital increases. And to maintain their profit margins, financial institutions just pass that increased cost directly onto the consumer.
So the bank basically says, hey, it costs us more to borrow this money from the bond market, so it's going to cost you more to borrow it from us.
Yep. The Bank of Canada did absolutely nothing, yet global geopolitical tension just made your fixed mortgage in Edmonton more expensive.
That is just, I mean, it creates an incredibly stressful dilemma for a buyer. I'm looking at fixed rates potentially creeping into the mid-fours, and I crave payment certainty.
Of course you do.
If geopolitical events keep pushing inflation up and everyday life gets more expensive, I really need to know exactly what my housing cost is going to be so I can budget for, like, groceries and utilities.
And as a homeowner staring down an upcoming renewal, my anxiety is entirely different. I'm coming off a really low rate from a few years ago.
Oh man, the renewal shock.
It's terrifying. Do I lock in a fixed rate right now before the bond market pushes them even higher? Or do I ride a variable rate, betting that once all this geopolitical dust settles, the Bank of Canada will eventually resume cutting their policy rate?
I feel like we spend way too much time asking, you know, which rate will be mathematically cheaper over 5 years?
Because it's the wrong question.
Yeah.
Nobody has a crystal ball for the bond market. We need to reframe this entirely. The question you should be asking yourself is, what kind of risk are you comfortable owning?
Owning the risk. Okay, so if I take a variable rate, I am prioritizing flexibility. The penalty to break a variable mortgage is usually just capped at 3 months' interest.
Right, which is relatively small.
But I am owning the risk of my payments or my amortization schedule fluctuating based on all these macroeconomic forces that I cannot control.
Exactly. And if you choose a fixed rate, you own payment certainty. You can sleep at night knowing your exact monthly obligation.
Which sounds great.
It does. But you are also accepting the risk of massive interest rate differential penalties if life happens. A job relocation, a divorce, a sudden need to downsize.
You're stuck.
Yeah, if you have to break a fixed mortgage in year two or three, the penalty can be staggering.
Yeah.
The cheapest rate on the spreadsheet isn't the cheapest rate in reality if a life event forces you to pay a $20,000 penalty. Fixed versus variable is a risk management decision. It is not simply a rate comparison. You have to factor in your personal cash flow tolerance and your actual life timeline.
Which perfectly illustrates how identical market conditions require completely different strategies depending on who you are. The exact same data point means two different things.
Oh, 100%.
Let's do a little segment here. Let's call it same headline, different decision. Let's look at the August headlines through both of our lenses. I'll take the buyer side, you take the seller side.
Sounds good. Hit me.
Okay, headline number one. Total inventory in the greater Edmonton area is up 15%, sitting over 8,000 properties. As a buyer, my decision is to take my time. I have more choice, I can be highly selective about the location and the condition, and I have the leverage to ask for a home inspection without instantly losing the deal.
And as a seller, my decision is to double down on presentation and pricing. I have significantly more competition than I did in the spring. That means my home needs to look absolutely flawless to stand out against the 8,000 other options out there.
You can't just throw it on the MLS and pray.
Exactly. I cannot afford to test the market with an inflated aspirational price.
Okay, headline number two. Year-to-date sales are down almost 10%. So as a buyer, my strategy is to hunt for stale listings. A drop in sales volume means properties are sitting longer, which means there are motivated sellers out there whose personal timelines are getting really squeezed. I am looking for the opportunity where the seller's carrying costs are pushing them to make a deal.
Wow, cutthroat. But as a seller, my strategy is to ignore the past.
Ignore the past.
Yeah. A 10% drop in sales means yesterday's comparable sales, what my neighbor sold for 3 months ago during the spring rush, that might no longer dictate the value of my listing today. I have to price for the slower, more cautious market that is directly in front of me right now, not the market we had 6 months ago.
That's a really tough pill for sellers to swallow. Okay, third headline. Bond yields are rising, signaling upward pressure on fixed rates. As a buyer, my decision here is actually to act, because waiting carries a severe financing risk.
Mm-hmm.
If I wait 6 months for home prices to drop by, say, $10,000, but mortgage rates rise by 0.5% in the meantime, my monthly carrying cost actually goes up.
And as a homeowner, my decision is to start my renewal planning right now, much earlier than I anticipated. I really can't afford to wait until 30 days before my term ends to see what the bank offers me, because the bond market is just moving too fast.
It really all comes down to that constant struggle of trying to time the market. I kind of want to dig into the actual mechanics of why waiting is such a dangerous game right now.
Let's do it.
I actually brought these three index cards to visualize this.
Yeah.
We're constantly juggling three variables, right? We have price, rate, and time.
Okay, I see them.
So the instinct as a buyer right now is to wait for the home price to drop. Inventory is up, sales are down, so you sit on your hands and wait for a deal. So I'm moving the price card down on the table here.
Which, you know, seems logical on the surface.
But let's look at the actual amortization math. While you are waiting for a 2% drop in the purchase price, global bond markets react to an oil shock and fixed mortgage rates climb by 0.5%. So I'm moving the rate card up.
Right, they go in opposite directions.
The amount of interest you will pay over the life of that higher rate mortgage completely wipes out the 10 grand you saved on the purchase price. In fact, your monthly payment is probably higher now.
The rate offset just entirely consumed the price advantage.
Exactly. And the third variable is time. So I'm moving this time card forward. While you are playing this waiting game, tracking stats, refreshing listing apps every 5 minutes, and stressing over global tariffs, another year of your life passes.
That's the part people always forget.
You spent another year paying rent in an inflationary environment or living in a house that just doesn't fit your growing family anymore. You're delaying your actual life plans to win a spreadsheet victory that honestly got erased by the bond market anyway.
People get so hyper-fixated on securing the lowest possible purchase price that they lose sight of the entire financial equation.
Which brings us to the core thesis. Mm. It is the one line that I think every buyer and seller needs to internalize in this confusing market. You don't buy a price. You buy a financial outcome.
You don't buy a price. You buy a financial outcome. I think that perfectly encapsulates the reality. Your monthly carrying costs, the security of your housing, your ability to weather an inflation spike, and the actual progression of your life, they are all part of the transaction. You really cannot isolate the sticker price of the house and pretend that is your entire strategy.
So where does that leave you, the person listening to this right now, the person trying to navigate this weird, totally contradictory August 2026 data?
My advice is to stop trying to perfectly time the market. The macroeconomic variables, U.S. tariffs, Middle East energy conflicts, bond yields, hyperlocal inventory levels, they are far too complex to predict with any real certainty.
Nobody knows for sure.
Nobody. Success doesn't come from outsmarting the global economy. Success comes from understanding the decision you are making inside the current market conditions. Stress test your household budget against higher rates, know your personal risk tolerance, and make a housing choice based on your actual life needs, not just reacting to whatever headline you read this morning.
We open this talking about a paradox. Sales are down, inventory is up, prices are holding, rates are diverging. It is a completely chaotic environment.
It really is.
But you don't navigate a storm by staring harder at the weather radar, right? You just have to make sure your ship is secure. So we leave you with one final thought to mull over before you sign any paperwork. Don't ask what the market is going to do next year. Ask yourself. Given the specific home, the financing actually available to you today, your personal life timeline, and your own tolerance for financial risk.
Does the decision still make sense?
PropertySmart.ca.